Hello and welcome to the Trouble with the Snap podcast. I am Tyler Hayward. A lot of things to get to today. Nothing, too far out of the ordinary. Going to talk a little bit about Michigan and Michigan State's struggles on the hardwood again, if we see any legitimate cause for concern. But then, look, we're going to start with football. We are wrapping up the football season. And now that, the season is finally close to over, which seems weird to say, it's just, you look at the Big Ten standings and both Michigan and Michigan State are down at the bottom in the Big Ten East. Now that football season is finally over, Michigan State found their quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it took a long time, and rightfully
Eight
so,
games
though.
and one.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot to cover today. I mean, look, this we had a lot to say, primarily me, about Mel Tucker and his coaching performance in the second half. But I think the bigger picture is, yeah, I mean, I think Thorne is by far the better quarterback. Tyler, you've been calling it from day one, and I think we have plenty of proof to validate your early on statements. He looked comfortable and until the second half. Obviously, Penn State picked it up. Penn State, by the way, I don't think we gave them enough credit, but I think a lot of it had to do with their circumstances this year. It's a very talented group of kids still. I mean, that defense with Shaka Toney, is very talented. They have a lot of good players. They got after Michigan State in the second half. They had a better game plan, and I think we kind of had some concerns up front, even coming in that Michigan State blocking Penn State would be an issue. And I think that's what made Thorne struggle a little in the second half. But he is definitely the guy moving forward. I think that it's stamped, signed, and delivered. I mean, if Mel Tucker can't figure that one out, I don't know what to say. But again, a lot of bright spots in the first half. They looked like a really good team. And in his post-game presser, he had mentioned that look, we knew we could win this game. We felt like we could win this game in the first half. We proved that we're a good football team. In the second half, we did not. And that's pretty obvious. But look, Morgan, it was nice to see him in the end zone. Speedy Naylor again got loose. A lot of bright spots, Michigan State football still. And I don't want to get crazy negative today, but boy, oh boy, man, I just think Mel Tucker is going to have to figure out a few things the next couple of years. And one thing he's got to figure out is who do I put on the field, because he's got talent. And you know how we feel about the ridiculous statements on Mark left the cupboards empty and he's ruined the program, blah, blah, blah. Look, that's not an excuse right now. This team has talent, and Mel's gonna have to figure out who to play.
Yeah, and I mean, it's too late now. One game coming up, and we'll dissect those. Yeah, later in the week, obviously, Michigan State got announced that they will be making up their canceled COVID game with Maryland. Michigan gets an Iowa team that's just really starting to click on all cylinders. And like I said, we'll talk about those a little bit later. But yeah, it. Look, we said it. There have been bright spots with this team, and we said it, and I said it when we were doing our game by game prediction that, look, Michigan State, the cupboard is not as bare as people think. Obviously, there's, some areas lacking. Trey Person got beat a couple times against Penn State, whatever. Penn State, not as bad as the record showed. But they lost such a big piece due to an opt-out on defense. Like, it's really hard to recover when you're still not recruiting at the rate of, a Michigan or an Ohio State. And so Penn State still had a little bit of talent, but when you lose a big, massive piece like that, it is a little harder to make up.
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah, there's.
Mel Tucker, meanwhile, I know you want to swing on Mel Tucker.
Oh, I definitely do. Yeah, I mean, I just don't think. Look, this is big boy football. I mean, we had a conversation about Colorado having a pretty good season, and they ran into a Utah team who's typically good, and they end up losing. But
And they were beating Utah for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it was a, you know, a snow-driven field, and you know that's not an excuse. I mean, Colorado's got to win that game. They've been playing well all year, and Utah is just a program that's been built very well. Michigan's found that out multiple times, and you know, look, I just felt like the second half proved that he has ways to go. You know, and I think we knew coming in this wasn't the guy. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say Mel Tucker's a bad football coach, but what I will say is you have to figure out how to make proper adjustments going into a second half. And I feel like he's dropped the ball multiple times this year. Look, I thought the Michigan game, I thought they should have won by 3 or 4 touchdowns. I mean, I thought that they did not attack certain things well enough in that game in the second half. I thought in this game they completely were not prepared for the pass because Penn State ran all game in the first half. They figured out, well, they're just going to do it again. No, most of the time when things don't work for another team, they're going to try to change some things up. They still have Jahan Dotson. They still have talented receivers, and they're going to change it up. You have to be prepared. And you know the fake screen play was really a complete breakdown defensively, and that was a young kid that made a mistake. It's not all coaching. I get it. But they just looked wildly unprepared, Tyler, in the second half. And I just think, like, this kind of goes into the next thing I want to say. And I know this is going to be hard for some people to understand, but you and I both know we felt Julian Barnett was a talented kid. And when you come in your first year, when you know you're going to have probably a rough year, I mean, you're changing a few things, you have to do all the right things and say all the right things. You're going to make mistakes, but I just felt like the things this guy said, the paragraph I sent you on, this is how, you know, every guy that comes in is going to have to want to play the way we want them. It turned into like not a player bashing, but almost like pump the brakes, dude. This is your first year. Kids are learning you, and you can't afford to lose a kid like Julian Barnett, who, by the way, was a highly touted kid that Alabama looked at. He's from this state. Belleville football is very good in the state. They've been really, you know, putting a lot of kids in the next level in college. That's not a guy you want to lose. And it, with a team that you're sitting here saying, we need depth, we need to use every piece of talent we have. I have a huge problem wondering why Elijah Collins didn't play much this year, why Julian Barnett's leaving, why Morgan wasn't used much, why Peyton Thorne was not the starting quarterback. You should have known that. Why didn't he?
Jeremy, proceed about a pay plan.
Well, like I said, and what I mentioned earlier, there's decisions that are the question from Mel Tucker that have been made this year, whether it's a shortened season or not, Thorne not being the starter or at least taking the job over when he's played well. Julian Barnett leaving is a huge question mark. Why Elijah Collins wasn't used much, your leading rusher from last year. Why are you running certain plays during certain situations, second down and long, running the ball over and over?
Second and 11, a dive right up the middle. Like, this is Dave Warner level play calling.
And this is Dave Warner level play calling. This is a defensive coach, by the way, Mel Tucker, who, you know, has huge pride in that. But offensively, you got to know when you play teams like Penn State, Ohio State, the better teams, you got to score points and you got to run the right stuff. But my big concern is really the Julian Barnett thing, because I just think that's the type of kid you can't lose. And I really wonder why he didn't play much on either side of the ball, because this kid has played two different positions 2 years now. And, you know, it's just really puzzling to me. And look, I know certain coaches, when they come in, certain guys, it just doesn't work, right? I get it. And honestly, I have a different approach to the transfer portal. I actually think it's a good thing. I mean, I transferred, and look, a lot of people don't understand this. Coaches actually do push players out, and they actually try to help them. So I think it was one of those deals with Barnett where they said, look, it's just not working. I think you should probably take a look at this. I don't think it was Barnett, you know, just coming in and saying, this sucks, I hate it here. I think it just didn't work. But I wonder why. Like, that's my wonder. And I also, look, is Elijah Collins hurt? I have to ask that question again because nobody seems to mention it. And I just don't know how you can't put that guy in the game as much as they did this year. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going on there on that. there's a lot of questions. I think that we'll have a lot of answers next year. I think we'll figure out what this guy's trying to do. You know, maybe he's just gonna say, look, we're gonna clean house. You're not gonna do things the way you did under Mark D'Antonio, which I think is ridiculous, because a lot of these people that want to talk bad about Mark D'Antonio really need to figure out some things in life. Because this guy had a great culture. So when Mel Tucker mentions culture, we got to change culture. You don't really need to change much of the culture. You can change a few things, but the one thing they need to change is they got to learn how to play call better. And offensively was bad this year. I thought that this year was way worse than last year.
Well, yeah, because here's the thing is Brad Salem was a decent offensive coordinator. He just didn't really have the tools. You know, now you're starting to see these tools. You're starting to see a couple of these freshmen that were so important last year, you know, start to step up their game a little bit. And, you know, this goes to show something.
Brian Lewerke was hurt a lot last year. People got to remember this. He was banged up last year. He was not the same quarterback as he was in 17.
Yeah, he wasn't the same quarterback his last 2 years, yeah.
Right.
But here's the thing, too, is this is like one of the more harsh statements you could possibly put on a football coach. You had an 11-point lead, and that includes, again, bad clock management by James Franklin, because what would be a college football game?
Imagine in, that.
Oh, yeah, I know, with bad clock management from James Franklin. At the end of the first half, you had an 11-point lead with 30 minutes to go, and you lost to, and I'm going to say, the worst coach in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
He wins based upon the talent he recruits. It has nothing to do with his actual coaching. And you lost to him with an 11-point lead with 30 minutes left in the game. That is a devastating statement.
To get outscored the way they did in the second half was puzzling and shocking. I mean, Penn State has had so many problems offensively. Even, you know, the game looked a lot like the Michigan game. They just kind of wore down Michigan State and just kind of ran their stuff. But really what was shocking was the punt return was bad. You know, and Mel's always talking about complimentary football. That was terrible. Guys didn't look ready.
Special teams has been complimenting returners all season.
And, you know, it's just been, yeah, it's been a problem this year. But when you have a lead like that and you see things are working, they were passing all over Penn State. And you got to know that they're going to get after the quarterback. We got to figure out certain ways. That's why I say, why wasn't Elijah Collins not used more? I mean, this is a guy that can run the ball. He was your leading rusher last year. You just don't throw guys like that to the side. You just don't throw guys like Julian Barnett, who was a four-star, to the side. You just don't lose those kids. Those are the kids you have to keep, no matter what you think. They don't fit in, or they don't like your attitude or your culture. Maybe they even give you a little attitude back. You can't lose kids like that. I mean, Elijah Collins, I'm worried for Michigan State, because I think that kid is a very good running back. This is a 1,000-yard rusher who barely got the ball this year. And it got worse as the season went on, you know. And I really like Simmons, by the way. I think Simmons.
Yeah, to be fair, Simmons balled out, but there's no reason to start Hayward in a game. Hayward, I thought, you know, made massive strides. If anything, you know, he could be a third down back, was easily the best pass blocker on the team, obviously the best receiving back, bar none. I think that he would have actually had a complimentary role this year. But to sit there and just take all of Collins' carries and give them to a guy who can't hit the hole like Collins or Simmons, I think was laughable.
Oh, it was absolutely laughable. And look, here's the deal. Like, when you look at your program moving forward, you have two guys that are young in the backfield, and Simmons and Collins, you know, they have 3 or 4 years left, both of them combined. So it's like, you have to think about that. You have to think, okay, I got a guy who rushed for 1,000 yards as a freshman last year. I have another freshman coming in from Georgia and Simmons who is really good. Hayward's a guy who wanted to leave. You don't bank on those kids. You don't bank on that. You say, look, we're going to find a way to get Hayward in some screen passing. Like the Michigan game, I thought Mel Tucker, it made all the perfect sense. You know, you knew Don Brown was going to over-pursue like they always do. That makes sense to throw it to Connor Hayward out of the backfield. It worked. You do it. You profile that. But as far as two running backs in your program that you're going to have for multiple years, it's Simmons and Collins. So you have to find a way to give them confidence. Simmons is going to be confident. He's going to come in next year. But Elijah Collins, I don't know now. I mean, I don't know what his future is, and that worries me because I think Hayward's done. Isn't he done now? I mean, or does he have one more year?
Well, I mean, technically he would be done, but with the COVID situation, you know, everybody, this is a free year for everybody. So yeah.
That's a huge question. Who's going to come back? Because I mean, Michigan's dealing with that right now. They're talking about D linemen, you know, guys like Quiddy Pay. Aiden Hutchinson has to come back, I think, because he got hurt. I don't think Quiddy Pay will, but Carlo Kemp, they keep mentioning, hey, is Carlo Kemp going to come back for his 12th year? I mean, this is going to be an issue where, okay, if you
Drew Beasley's dealing with this situation as well. He's on the fence.
But this is what I would think as a coach. I got to think about the kids I know I'm going to have for 3 or 4 years. Forget COVID. You know, Hayward, I don't know if he's going to come back. You know, Michigan side, I don't know if Carlo Kemp, Quiddy Pay's going to come back. I got to recruit a certain way. So if they got kids coming in that are in certain positions, which Michigan State does and Michigan does, you've got to kind of think about the future, the new kids coming in and your freshmen and sophomores now. So that's why I'm a little disturbed that Mel Tucker put a lot of his eggs in the Hayward basket when you don't know what this kid's going to do next year. You don't even know. He didn't even want to be there this year until, you know, he somehow got it back. Those are kids that you could say, you know, it wasn't working before for you. It probably won't work now. And I don't know. I just thought that, look, we know where he lacks in coaching with game planning or adjustments, I should say. We know the offense is very vanilla, but you got a quarterback that I think is going to be really good in Thorne. And I think that's a no-brainer for next year. Gosh, I hope they do it. You got Naylor back, Reed back. Morgan's going to be a great threat for him. You know, Ricky White was hurt a lot at the end. He was huge at times. Mosley, I loved him. We didn't see him much this year, but, you know, they got a lot of depth. And you gotta play Thorne. I mean, with the depth you have, you just have to play Thorne.
Yeah, Thorne reminds me of a pro-style Drew Stanton is what it is. You know, he's got that ability to take off and run. Really good short to intermediate. Probably leaves a little to be desired in regards to his arm strength. But, yeah, he might even be more efficient. You know, we need to wait and see what experience will he get him if, you know, God forbid Mel Tucker ever decides to give him any. And so if he can, like, just clean up a couple of things, you know, I think he's obviously going to be he should be better than Drew Stanton, because Drew Stanton only had Matt Trannan, who dropped balls like Deontay Johnson but still made big plays. You know, Gary Reed and Jeremy Scott and guys like that. Those guys were – I mean, they were decent receivers, but they should never have been starting. No. And, you know, you turn around and Peyton Thorne gets guys like Jalen Naylor, Jaden Reed, Trey Mosley, Ricky White. You know, you get a 6'7" guy, Avon Morgan, right there. Like, that's a really, really – those are good complimentary pieces for a quarterback. And I think, you know, Peyton Thorne's going to be able to take advantage of it. Should he actually play? And, you know, that's not a decision that's up to the fans, because if it were, Peyton Thorne would have been starting after the Rutgers game.
I mean, you named now, some guys, Tyler, and I look at that and I say, wow, there's a lot of options there. And you could,
and they're all young.
And they're all young. And you have to, my goodness, Mel Tucker, Earth Mel Tucker, you got to find a lot of ways to get the ball to all those guys. So, you know, your second down and long, you know, let's scrap the simple dive run to Hayward or off tackle or between the tackle runs to a guy who is not fast. I mean, let's get some snap into the quarterback, a little quick pitch to Speedy Naylor and let him do some stuff. Let's get a quick throw to Ricky White next year. Let's get a lob throw to Morgan like they did in the first half. I mean, you got options, and I didn't even mention Jaden Reed yet. So, you know, or Trey Mosley. This guy has a lot of weapons. I don't want to hear about Mark D'Antonio left them with nothing. You know, this guy's got plenty of offensive weapons, and I think the defense is going to get better, and I think he's a defensive coach. So, look, there's a lot of positivity here. but it will get negative real quick if this guy doesn't know what to do. And I just don't know yet. And I hope I'm wrong when I say I just don't think it's going to work for him, because he doesn't seem to understand simple things that you got to do with the talent you have. So I
yeah, and I mean, one of the things is in a 4-2-5 system, you know, you need to have a lot of speed, because one of those safeties is coming up and he's ultimately playing like a third linebacker position. And you got to have a lot of speed, and you got to know, and you got to be able to react in that spot. And look, Michigan State's not a speedy team. They never have been, even when they've had just level upon level upon level of success under Mark D'Antonio. They never were really, you know, fast. It was a situation where they, you know, they were just better. They were more talented. They knew what to do.
Right.
They were more technically sound, and they were smarter. And, you know, part of the that may fall into, you know, how long he had those guys before he played them. You know, he would play guys till they're juniors or seniors getting ready to roll.
Yeah.
And so they knew what they needed to do from the second they stepped in. And I think that that's a situation that that is going to hopefully work itself out. I don't know if Mel Tucker is going to be able to get this all figured out. A 4-2-5, you got to have speed.
Yeah.
Your defense.
Let me ask you a question, Tyler. Let me ask you this question. I'm going to ask you a 2-part question.
You want to know who the speed was on that team? Julian Barnett.
Right. So this is my 2-part question for you. And this is, I think I know the answer, but I want to, what is the identity of Michigan State and Michigan as a football team on both sides of the ball? That's my question to you.
What is it, or what is it typically?
Well, let me just say this real quick before you have the full answer. I don't know what the identity of Michigan or Michigan State is. And that's the problem. I know what it should be. I think the identity of Michigan State football and offense should be, we're fast. We've got fast guys. We can throw the ball. We've got a good quarterback. Let's get guys in space. Let's do speed space like Gattis wants to do. Michigan should be the other way around. We got a couple really good running backs. We're big.
Hassan Haskins is
a, you know, we don't have a quarterback that we know what he can do yet. Let's try to control the clock. And on defense, you know, Michigan is not physical. So, look, you got to fly around the ball. They tried to do a little bit of that, but they were just too small. Michigan State, you got to be fast too. I mean, you got to hit guys. This guy says relentless. I thought they were very weak at times. You know, they got pushed around. So, I mean, what is the identity right now for Michigan State, I guess, Tyler? I mean, I don't see it yet.
Well, it's funny that you broke it down like that, because you said Michigan State needs to operate on the speed and space mentality. They want to, quote unquote, according to Mel Tucker, run the ball on their terms. And it seems like both schools are doing the opposite of what they should do based upon the talent that they have.
Absolutely.
Get the ball to your best player. Get the ball to your best player. And, you know, we are running out of time, so we're going to touch on basketball really quick. A couple shout-outs first. Kari Willis, Jackson area boy. Me and Jeremy are from the Jackson area. First career touchdown. You know, even Tony Dungy, who was also Jackson area boy, went to Kari Willis's rival school. Tony Dungy giving Kari Willis some of that love on the Sunday Night Football pregame show. I thought that that was awesome to see, because, you know, he talked about Jackson, and that was incredible. And a special shout out to our most recent guest that we've had on the show. NFL teams often go out and they name a state coach of the year. The Cincinnati Bengals, Ohio Coach of the Year, former Michigan State fullback Trevin Pendleton. So congratulations to him. Can't wait to see what he's going to do. You know, couldn't win that, was ended up being a runner-up for the second straight year, but big things going to be coming out of that program, definitely.
Yes.
Anyways, to basketball, Michigan, another close game. Look, Penn State plays in the Big Ten. But at the same time, I think Penn State, because of the loss of Watkins, who's about 45 years old, because of Lamar Stevens' absence, you know, this was a team that was supposed to take a massive step back. Now, they do play in the Big Ten, and there's not going to be a single cakewalk in the Big Ten this year. But look, it's another close game, but on the other hand, another huge one for Hunter Dickinson.
Well, I think people are really dropping the ball on Penn State because, number one, they just beat Vatek at their place by 20. I think that team is going to surprise a lot of people. I think they have good guard play. They're big. They've got some veterans that have been around. You know, everybody wants to talk about the two guys they lost. Well, Michigan lost their two best players technically as well. So I think it evened out, and I think it was a rugged game. I'm not overly, like, impressed with Michigan's win, but I do think Penn State's going to surprise some people. That's a really strong physical team, and when they hit shots, they'll be tough. I wasn't expecting that to be anything but a close game. I mean, I think Michigan still has some things they got to figure out. They don't have much depth. You know, guys like Brandon Johns, look, Stephen Bardo, I'm going to take his words. At times he does okay, and other times we just don't know what he's doing out there, and he struggles. And you cannot have that right now when you lost a guy like Davis, because now Johns is coming in and having to play, you know, inside, and he really struggles inside. So the depth is what worries me with Michigan. They have an 8-man or 7-man rotation right now. With Davis, it was 8 or 9. I think Terrence Williams is the guy you have to play more. He's a freshman. He has done really well. He could play the 3 or 4, undersized inside, but just really strong. And they're going to have to take a look at that, Tyler. All around, I thought Mike Smith played his best game at point guard. He looked really good. Dickinson is just getting better and better every time. Brown and Livers and Brooks, just veteran guys that you can depend on and win those type of games. And Franz Wagner is still something you got to look out for. I'm not overly impressed, of course, but I do think people are dropping the ball a little bit on Penn State because they're a lot better than people think, and they just have to look back not too long ago. They just crushed a really good Vatek team by 20. So, you know, look, that happens in college basketball, though. They could come in and lose to Nebraska the next game. You never know. I mean, but my point is it's still a win. Michigan's got a lot of things they got to worry about with depth because I don't know how long Davis is going to be out, and that's going to be a huge concern for that team moving forward.
Yeah, and I mean, look, anytime you beat a Big Ten team, look, you're 1-0 in the Big Ten. You don't have a lot of ground to make up right now. You know, you did what you were supposed to do. You know, Penn State, obviously really good, despite, you know, all the coaching change as well, which was just incredibly unpredictable.
Yeah. Their assistant coach took over. I think it was the same program we've seen last year. I mean, I really do. I think they're going to be better than people think. I mean, I may be wrong, but they looked good. I thought they were going to beat Michigan coming in, by the way. I really did.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those situations. Like we said, it's just something where Michigan had a couple games that were a little too close that probably shouldn't have been as close. But then again, that's almost happening everywhere around the country. When you look at it, that home court advantage means nothing. You know, that three-pointer that shuts a crowd up, you know, that doesn't mean anything. Yeah. You know, when it typically would. And, you know, those are momentum-killing things. And, look, I think it's to a point, you know, some people say, oh, momentum's not real. It's blah, blah. It's this and that and the other thing. We're seeing it this year. Momentum is very real.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And, you know, I've had an opportunity to play against somebody who was on a Sweet 16 team before. And look. I took it to him. I did. And it was just some of my shot was falling. I suck at basketball otherwise, but I was hot for a couple of weeks in my basketball 101 class at Michigan State. And well, look, I put it on him.
You crushed him. Hey, look, this is pickup basketball in a way, man. Go out there, roll the ball out. There's no crowd. There's no maze rage is zone. You got to play ball. I mean, I watch the NBA bubble. I'm a diehard basketball guy, so I watch no matter what political stances players have or what. I don't really care. The bubble was interesting because it was all about you just got to bring it and play ball. There's no momentum at all as far as crowd noise unless they pipe it in a little louder. But, no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, this is going to be a different year. We said this. We already said this in both sports that – it's going to be a weird year because those little things aren't going to come into play. So it's mono versus mono. You know, it's coach versus coach. It's player versus player. It's you know, not getting COVID. Hopefully no cancellation of games. And let's see what we do when we get out there.
You know, Michigan State, well, you saw what they could do when they get out there. 109 points, despite a lot of turnovers. You know, Aaron Henry, his usual self, minus six turnovers. You know, it's something where he tries to do a little bit too much when he tries to drive. He's still a great facilitator, but he just needs to kind of keep down a swivel a little bit more in aggressive 1-3-1 zone. The problem, you can score 109 points all you want. The problem is when you give up 91. And your quote-unquote Tom Izzo's best team, since Mateen Cleaves and Charlie Bell won't let you even bring the ball up the floor.
Yeah. No, I thought that, you know, look, Oakland has some quick guards. They play pretty wide open when they get rolling his shots. Look, Michigan, I mean, they were so thankful and blessed to win that one. That's a team that will surprise some people in that conference, the Horizon League. They're very small, though.
Is this the best team that ever, is this the best team ever that started out 0-7?
You know, they're just very talented at the guard positions. Williams is just a player, and, you know, he's going to score a ton of points this year. And I love the point guard they have, and they have other kids that come in that can hit shots. Just a fast team, a different team, not a team that you're going to see in the Big Ten. And I think it causes a little bit of concern. Look, and you don't really have enough, like, knowledge of these guys. You may know what they have and seen them play a little bit, but this is not like, oh, we know what Wisconsin's going to do. We know what Michigan's going to do. We know what Iowa wants to do, pile it inside the Garza. We know what they got. We can scout these guys. We've had them for years. And it always makes it a little more difficult. But I thought Michigan State adjusted well. You know, they could get whatever they want on offense. I told you, Tyler, I think this is one of the best shooting teams he's had in a long time. They got a lot of kids that can shoot. They got a lot of pieces. Their depth is ridiculous. Still a very, very good team. And they just got to get to the Big Ten. I mean, they're ready for it. They need it. They need to play against a team that, you know, that they are accustomed to play against. And they got to go back to this when they get to the tournament, if all goes well. And look, we got to keep guys in front of us. We can't let fast guards get to the paint. We can't give space. We got to, you know, dig and recover better. And we can't turn the darn ball over because they continue to turn the ball over. But those are things that will be fixed. But I think in the Big Ten, that's just a top three team for sure, no matter what happens. If they lose a game, I'm not going to change my mindset. And but, man, they can shoot it. I mean, when you have a guy like Hauser who can hit from anywhere, you got a guy like Langford who can hit from anywhere. Henry, when he's open, can Gabe Brown is lights out. You notice after every game, Tyler, keep posting about it. These guys are shooting nonstop. I mean, that I think they feel really confident as a shooting team because of the work they're putting in. So I think that's going to be key for them. Got to hit shots and then defensively change a few things.
Yeah, I don't know how you score. I think Gabe Brown hit 20, scored 20 in a 109-point game, and you're still the first one out there afterwards, you know, taking some jumpers. And it's like, all right, you know, this kid's 6'7". You know, range like that, the ability to get up like he did on one of his, I think it was on the alley-oop from Hogard. You look at those, and it's like, okay, he can obviously do everything.
Yeah.
You know, just needs to tighten up his defense a little bit more. This is an NBA prospect that's a seventh man off the bench. You know, I mean, or not seventh man off the bench, but seventh man on the team.
Yeah.
This is a very quality player, and you know, the fact that you have him being able to come off the bench, score 20, 109-point game, and he's still out there busting his butt, you know, I think it says a lot about you know, how bad this team wants it, how bad they thought they should have had it last year, to be honest.
Yeah,
I don't know how it comes out in this post game though afterwards. Yeah, we got to get Hauser the ball more. Like, wow, what you were doing was working on offense. You know, he scored 109. Just let this one slide a little bit, is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is a team, like, defensively, I think they're fine. You know, they didn't play the greatest defense, but at the same time, they contested a lot of those threes, and there's not much you can do about that. You know, there were some that obviously they let Williams go a little too early. Henry tried to be sneaky and make a jump, and it didn't work. It bit him in the butt. And, you know, that type of stuff happens. But Williams, for the most part, he had a hand in his face. He just made it. You know, there's not a lot you can do about that.
He did. I mean, in the Michigan game, it was the same deal. Those are just fast guards. And look, You know, I hate to keep bringing up the nightmare of Middle Tennessee State, but when you run into those teams, you know, you just have to get whatever you want on offense because they might get loose on you a little bit. They're fast. They're quick. You know, they can score. Oakland's going to score a ton of points this year. I mean, they might lose a lot of games, but they're going to score on you. So you just have to score on them. You have to, when they do miss one and done, which Michigan State did most of the game, they out-rebounded them 52-20. So, you know, they got second chance points. You know, that's what makes that team so dangerous every year with this coaching staff is they crash the offensive glass still very well. When you miss, it's one and done and they run. And that's just a product of great basketball and great program, great culture, and a team you always know is going to make a run probably. So I have zero concern. The couple things they need to change are so minor, but yeah, against teams like Oakland, you got to do it. When they play Penn State, when they play Michigan, it's going to be slow. Stop them, dig, recover, get out, contest, box out, run, and you'll be fine. But Oakland's different. They spread you out. They create. They get their guys the ball that can score, and they just give it to them all game. Not every team in the Big Ten, or if any, are going to play that way. You might see some guys where they dump it to Garza, and that's their guy. But Michigan State is so ready for that. I mean, they've proven that. So, I think defensively they'll be just fine. It's all about the right pieces out there. I'd say one concern I have, though, Tyler, is the right blend of players. How can they have the best offense and defense group on the floor at the same time? I think that would be something to look at because Bingham's going to defend well against Garza prior, right? He's going to stop him. He's got the long arms. But he has looked he's looked out of place on offense. And I just don't know if it'll ever be something he gets down. But look, I think they're going to be really tough to beat, man. I just can't wait for them to get back to the Big Ten Conference. I think where they have Northwestern, right?
Northwestern right now is their next scheduled game, but Tom Izzo actually went out, got permission. This is finals week, and he is trying to get a game scheduled for, well, he said Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. I'm assuming with how late it is right now, Tuesday's off the table. He's trying to get something Wednesday or Thursday, but then you got to try to find someone who's not during finals and stuff like that. Izzo said that he was told by the university they have to play at home, and so there's a lot of logistical things that have to go into this. But he said he wants one more, and I think what it is he's going to try to get certain guys like Mady Sissoko and AJ Hogert a little more playing time, which, you know, is going to kill that best offensive defensive combination that you've talked about. But, you know, this point, you know, you got to figure out if you can play a guy like Sissoko, who that's my money on who's going to sit there and try to guard Garza a lot if Marble doesn't frustrate him or if Bingham gets bullied, because that's the only way that you're going to stop either. That's the only way you're going to stop him is, you know, Marble's got to play bigger than he is, just like Tillman did last year, because they're about the same height. And then you got to look at Bingham, you know, just as a starting point, if anything. And, you know, if that fails, you have Marble's muscle, or then you have a little bit of a combination of both and Sissoko with a little more athleticism, except he fouls a ton. So, you know, it's a catch 22.
A lot of depth. Yeah, and you haven't mentioned Kithier yet either. I mean, that my thing I'm not talking about Kithier right we'll now. Take all the depth we can use over here, because this is seven or eight guys in Michigan, and I'm very worried. So Michigan State, as much as we have this battle every year about that playing too many guys, it's such an advantage, though, in a Big Ten Conference season for Tom to have, you know, really 10 guys always.
And if COVID comes up and, you know, there is one player who tests positive but nobody else does, you know, you need to have that other option that can sit there and be like, okay, Langford's out, Brown, you're in. Okay, Kithier's out, Marble, you're starting. Bingham, you're starting. You know, you got to have that. Rockets out, Lawyer, you're in. Hogard, get ready to play a lot. You know, you have to have that available this year.
Shout out to Foster Lawyer. He went to Chad Mortimer Charge School. He has really defended better, hasn't he? I mean, he really has.
Yeah, he's been great. He was always a step slow doing it last year, but, you know, he picked up the speed, and we noticed that during the Duke game. Not even necessarily with the Charges, just the fact he was able to stay in front of somebody. Yeah. But, yeah, Northwestern on Sunday, the next game, Michigan against Iowa on Saturday in football. Michigan State plays Maryland in the COVID makeup game. We'll talk about those. We will talk about Michigan State's potential opener on Sunday if something else doesn't get thrown in there, or else we'll just recap if a replacement game gets thrown in there. But that does it for us on the Trouble with the Snap podcast. For Jeremy File, I'm Tyler Hayward.